The title of today's message is God, or I will add God in creation. I'm going to read from Genesis 1, 1 through 2. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters.
Different,
right?
Interesting. I like seeing the different translations.
That's good. I know that is good. Different. It's written different ways. This morning I want to look at the story in a little bit different way, and I'm going to start out with a story that I'm sure we're all familiar with: the story of the three little pigs. Three little pigs came to town on a warm summer day, and they said to each other, "What a nice place to stay." They each made their plans with remarkable speed. They went out to look for things they would need. The first little pig built a house made of straw. He thatched and he thatched until he couldn't thatch no more. He worked every day till his trotters were sore. Then early one evening came a knock at the door. Little pig, would you let me come in?" "No, no, no, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin. Then I will huff and I will puff and I will blow your house in." "No, no, no, Mr. Wolf, I will not let you in." So he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he blew the house in. The second little pig built a house made of sticks. He paid close attention to all the little fiddly bits, with curtains on the windows and carpet on the floor. Then one evening came a knock on the door. Little pig, won't you let me come in?" "No, no, no, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin." "Then I will huff and I will puff and I will blow your house in." "No, no, no, Mr. Wolf, I will not let you in." So he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he blew the house in. The third little pig built a house made of bricks, which he felt would be stronger than the straw and or the sticks. He painted the ceiling and he painted the walls. Then early one evening came a knock on the door. Little pig, won't you let me come in?" "No, no, no, not by the hair of my chinny chin chin." Then he huffed. "Then I will huff and I will puff and I will blow your house in." "No, no, no, Mr. Wolf, I will not let you in." So he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he huffed and he puffed and he huffed. But he did not blow the house in. Now the three little pigs each had a house made of bricks, so they would not have to worry about the wolf and his tricks. They each found a wife from the same little town, and soon there were piglets running around. Now, what does the story mean? Is there anything in the story that's literally true? Doesn't talk about foundation. Talks about a house. That's what. What else? What is literally true about it? Anything? Not really much of anything. Dan.
Male
and female, and you'll
have a little one.
Never thought of that one. Jerry, what did you have to say?
I said, it
could
also represent the strength of your faith.
Yeah, it could. Now you're getting into a more esoteric understanding of it. So, the bottom line is there's nothing literally true about the story. Pigs don't build houses. False news? False narrative?
It wasn't totally false
because
pigs do make piglets.
And wolves do try to eat
them all together. But does a wolf huff and puff? Have anybody ever seen a wolf huff and puff? So the story, it has a deeper meaning than its literalness of the story. And that's where I want to go. That's how I want to look at Genesis. I want to look at Genesis in a different way than, quite frankly, I have looked at it in all my years. I've learned about this in one of my teaching course tapes, and so I will give this gentleman credit. The lecturer, which I have written down here somewhere, but I don't know where it's at. But anyway, I want to look at it, the story, in a literature way, not a literal way, but more literature, like a story that doesn't necessarily have to be true every step along the way, but it portrays a big picture, more so than just a literal creation of the story. And one of the things that I learned was that, for some reason, I always thought the creation story had to do with the universe. But it doesn't. It only has to do with the creation of the earth. And that really set me back this week. It's centered on the earth and the creation of the earth from that standpoint. It presumes that there's a God already existing. And that there is matter already existing. There is pre-existing matter. In context of Christianity, there is this idea that the earth and the universe was created out of nothing. I have to reframe that because the Bible was talking about the earth here. So it was that the earth was created out of nothing. But that is not biblically true, not only in this text, in other texts. Paul talks about us as created out of the unseen things. But yet, the church wants to put forth the idea that God created the earth out of nothing. So it presumes that there was something already, that the earth was formless and empty, darkness over the surface of the deep. All this represents a more chaotic look at the earth. So out of chaos, God created the earth. So the God of this particular creation story, next week we'll look at the second one, but this particular story is good. God in this story does not create evil. He only makes good out of chaos. That was an interesting take on it. It presumes, as we, as where we are standing now, we assume that the Big Bang already happened and all this kind of stuff. But they didn't have this knowledge back when this was written. They only understood it from the earth point of view. And there was an effort in the writing in order to demythologize the text. It wanted to move away from the idea of God's and whatnot, and thus the use of the words waters and light in order to move away, because the way from what I'm learning is that the Greek word for sun is very close to various different names of in Hebrew or Aramaic, whichever it was written in, very close to the idea that it represented the name of a particular god within the different cultures. So the writer is trying to move away from that type of understanding and point towards a God. What I also find interesting is at the end, then it talks about let us. In one sense, it wants to move away from that, but in the end, it comes back to it. And what really kind of blew me away, as I said, is that suddenly I have to look at from the standpoint of the earth and not the universe. And that this particular God did not create evil. Evil already existed. So I found that to be very interesting in the text. So each day as it goes on, God declares it as being good, taking chaos and making it good in each day. Now, next Sunday I'll deal a little more with the idea of creation and evolution, but this Sunday I'm not. So, as we take this as a literary whole, we start to pull back away from it and see a bigger and bigger picture. We aren't necessarily consumed by whether or not every little thing is true. It's pointing to an idea, similar to the three pigs story. There is meanings that can be gathered out of the story, but are not written into the story at all. And this is also a collection that's very old. It's condensed, and it's not a historical or a scientific thing. It is a story to be read aloud to the hearer. So it's spoken, it goes through the air, and it goes into your ears, and the Spirit is supposed to move you in a way that you understand. As I have said many times, the idea of literalness of the Bible is a late day thing. It is not at all the way the Bible was intended to be read. It's supposed to bring the Spirit of God into you. And so this gentleman who I listened to, he looks at the Old Testament as stories, large blocks of stories written down, and we are supposed to extract ideas out of them. I'm going to ask the question, because as we move over to the idea of verse 26 of chapter 1, when God said, "Let us make mankind in our image." This has always been a confusing and controversial verse. Why is Christianity so fearful of the idea of gods? We have always been, at least as far as I can remember, fearful of the idea of different gods. Why is that? I can't give you a good answer. I don't know. Why does monotheism want to do away with the layer of multiple gods? No one has really given me an answer. I would certainly be willing to listen to anybody who has a suggestion as to why for Christianity has done this.
Is it Christianity or is it the Roman Catholic Church?
Because of what? Every denomination that I know in the Christian church does away with gods.
I mean, they believe in the one God, but they consider people that believe in other gods, they consider them to be pagan, and they're not. But I mean, based on Baal and the golden calf or whatever, Moses said that they weren't supposed to have any gods before one God.
But Yahweh, the God of Israel, was a jealous God, and he... The way it is written in the Old Testament is that these gods were competing with Yahweh, the God of Israel. That's a statement that I've used, I've copied out, competing or were competitors towards Yahweh, the God of Israel, all through the Old Testament. So if these were nothing, then, go ahead, Shane.
No, go ahead.
If they were nothing, then why did he have anything to be fearful of? Right.
It became monotheistic later.
Yes, it did.
And they tried to weave monotheism into it without getting rid of their stories, which their stories. True. But they tried to weave monotheism into it, and that's kind of where we get some of our confusing things.
Yes, it is confusing. So there's no one clear thought running through the Bible. It's literature. It's like the story of the three pigs. You can have a whole lot of different ideas running through it. And that's the point that I want to make today. When you read your Bible, don't think that this is the only way that you is understood. And don't come to it with a preconceived idea. You are supposed to let the small, still voice speak within you and allow it to flourish and allow it to give you understanding. And every one of us here is in a different place. The second question I want to ask, this major storm that came moving up the coast, the hurricane, was there a God in that storm? A storm God?
You mean this most recent
yes.
story?
Yes, Darian or whatever his name, its name was.
Well, since I have family in Charleston, I was pretty grateful it didn't hit Charleston.
Last Sunday, I was asked to pray to move the storm out away. And I said, I wouldn't. I said, I would only pray that people would be protected in the storm. So the question, all cultures, all of us, come from cultures that had a multitude of gods. All of us did.
Since Christ, as he mentioned, multiple gods?
Well, he points further up the line. He says, the Father, and points on up further. So by that, he's acknowledging something above him.
But in the Gnostic text, he also recognizes the Mother.
Yeah. Most culture, all of us come from a culture where we had mother goddesses, and we had all these different goddesses. Every one of us, none of us here. We all come from that type of setting. But yet all of a sudden we're supposed to deny all these things and say there's only one God, person, that's active in this world. And I'm not convinced that's the case. I think we should be, by doing so, just because we deny the power of gods, does that make it so? Doesn't that make them more powerful? The Bible talks about spirits and what have you. The Bible is full of that kind of stuff, represented by gods. So why have we tried to destroy them? Now, do I think there's a god around every corner or there's a demon around every corner? No, I'm not that far. I think there should be a combination of things, Dan.
The devil is supposed to be a fallen angel.
Yes.
So is there only one bad god?
No, it's a third of the angels are said to have fallen. So what that number is, it could be a million billion.
They're all bad.
It depends on how many angels there is.
Fallen angels are all bad.
Well, okay. I'll get to Jerry in a second. There are several ideas about that, the fallen angels are the ones that who torment us and tempt us and try to lead us astray. And there's also the idea that we are the spirits of the fallen angels down here on this earth to redeem ourselves, or we have a chance to redeem ourselves. So I can't give you like yes or no answer. Most of a lot of these questions are no yes or answer. Yes or no answer. There's a multitude of answers. I could tell you, and you wouldn't probably believe it anyway. I could say this is exactly what it is, and you're going to say I don't believe that. So I have to, in this congregation, I have to have a broad spectrum in order to accommodate everybody. I'm not in a traditional setting where I can say this is the way it is, nor do I want to be that way. So I have to give it in a broader spectrum. So what happened to all these angels, these watchers that the Bible talks about? Does Christianity, by simply denying them, does that deny their existence? Am I just being foolish by simply saying they don't exist? Not that I should pray to them, which has happened in the past, but I should recognize them as having power. Jerry.
If you look into the history of the Catholic Church, you will find that what they did is they gradually kicked these other gods out of sight, out of mind, and framed their teachings to just one God. The reason for that was that if they had to answer questions to multiple gods and what their functions are, who to pray to, and all this, it was more work for the man of the cloth to deal with than what he could, and it was very confusing to the masses, so that you had individuals who leaned more to this God than this God, and so on. So that's what they did, is they brought it all in and made it to be just one God.
So you ask your priest for forgiveness and he intercedes for you. Or they pray to Mary to intercede. They have intercessors who are to intercede for you.
Correct.
Yeah. And Jesus is supposed to be our advocate. But I don't know that Jesus is saying to us that we are to pray to Jesus. We are to be in commune with the Holy Spirit. We are to have an inner voice within ourselves that listens. So the God of the storm that just went raging up through the, I'm sure I'm going to be scrutinized for that phrase, the God that went ripping up through the East Coast is not the God that we're supposed to pray to, but we're supposed to recognize the power of the storm. Now, do we want to say that God caused the storm to cause havoc on this, on the East Coast? Or is, in this text, this reading of creation, the writer says, no, that was already in the works. God is only good when he saved the people from being hurt and killed in the storm. He didn't create the storm. That was already chaotic chaos. And yet God was in the small, still voices on which the people were saved.
So, you know what? God doesn't favor them.
Well, you're thinking in terms of death is the end of the line, and that's a really bad thing. So there's life after. Well, you're saying some people died in the storm.
Yeah, but you said some people died.
Huh?
A lot of people died in the storm of the Bahamas. The storm in the fourth of Paris is chaotic, but the fourth of Egypt. You know, I've thought about the Dan and the Mumbai and the Jetta and
okay, so we'll write it off in our high technological world and say it's just a natural phenomenon.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is natural disasters.
I'm not convinced that everything is just a natural phenomenon. No, or gods.
I mean, so why does it favor
others? Isn't the earth being played out? Aren't we the pawns of the gods in some respect, in which we, by accepting different ideas, we are being manipulated to think? Where do our ideas come from? Why do some people think some? Why are we such a diverse group of people? And why aren't we all not thinking the same thing?
You've got all these different gods and goddesses. You've got all the gods from the Dur in Northern Ireland, you know, all the Celtic gods. You've got all the gods that were brought up from the Greek, you know.
Yeah, every culture has them.
Poseidon and all those guys and everything. And you got all the African tribal gods. You got all the gods from out in the Hawaiian Islands, you know, that they still pray to. A lot of the native Hawaiians still pray to their mother goddess.
Right, that's my point. You can't deny that. So why has Christianity destroyed that? Why is there a direct effort to destroy that?
Because they were probably going from the teachings of Moses saying, thou shalt not have no God before me. I've got a double negative in it. That means that it's positive. Anyway, thou shalt have no God before me.
That's an Old Testament commandment given to you by Yahweh, the God of Israel, because he was a jealous God. Right, Dick.
Because they don't want people to think for themselves, because then we won't need them.
The Old Testament was written in terms of Yahweh, the God of Israel, who was one God amongst many. It was a polytheist world and reality. It was not a singular idea. So this God, the stories that we have in the Old Testament and the Bible are written from a Hebrew or Jewish perspective. They were oral for many years. They were not, there might have been one scroll, they think maybe, and it was read. Not until 300-400 years before Jesus did they start writing them down. Before then, they were all oral. So they went back and as they've written these texts to focus upon the Jewish ideas or their religion and faith. It was to promote that idea. So the historical stories are written around Yahweh, the God of Israel. And that guy was a jealous, mean, vindictive. And I'm not the only one that says this stuff. This is not a Calvin idea.
So we should just start when Jesus revived him across the Old Testament.
We should understand our heritage. We should look at our heritage, and there's a lot of things that can be learned from the Old Testament. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we should do away with it. But we should keep it in context. When you use the Ten Commandments, you're using the laws that are given to the, were given to the Jewish people or the Israelite people. We were given the commandment to love the Lord thy God our heart, whatever that is, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's what we were given as Gentile people, non-Jewish people. That's our commandments, not the Ten Commandments. I submit to you that we don't even keep any of them. We don't keep the Sabbath. We don't keep, you know, thou shalt not murder. We don't. I mean, all of that. Many of them we don't. So to have... Yes, Jerry.
But if you look through history, you will find that a lot of the set up religious by different cultures, such as Native Americans, your Europeans and all that, they didn't have a controlling set of rules like the Ten Commandments. And they believe that if you're going to live good, you had to live good every day, not just one day out of the... And you didn't celebrate just one day out of the week.
You're saying that the cultures before the Ten Commandments came, the Sabbath day, that everybody, that cultures were supposed to live every day good?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not going to disagree with that. I think we are to live that. That's what Jesus said. We're supposed to live every day as good, not just one day. I understand that. So we say the Sabbath day. I'll keep, you know, that's one of the Ten Commandments. We don't keep the Sabbath day. We keep Sunday. And we're supposed to live every day under the Lord. So I submit to you, yes, there's a lot of value in the Old Testament. But we as non-Israelite people need to look at it in the context in which it was written. And not just, you know, like say... make up things. Now, there's one other thing I want to throw into the mix. Anybody hear of the royal we? Royal, like the royals?
Yeah,
W-E-W-E. W-E,
we.
No one heard of that?
Yes. You mean yourself.
Yeah, you, Shane, you must have heard of it. Yes.
We means me. If I'm the king and I say we, I really... Me.
Along with
the royal we.
Along with the power that comes with it.
Well, obviously, but I'm the king, so.
The easiest way I'm going to explain the royal we is that I've said to Colleen that we are going to Michigan. So she says to me, who's we? I said, me and my truck. So the royal we is a person who has... put upon them power. So this gentleman who I listen to says that the come let us is a royal we, meaning that it was an individual, one person God who had the Spirit of God who was taking upon him the power. Which, go ahead, Shane.
God created the heavens and the earth. The word God there is Elohim, which is plural, which is confusing to everybody.
Yes.
No matter what faith you're coming from. But that's an interesting take, is to say that it's royal, but...
Yes, he would rather take it that way than to say it's talking about a pantheon of gods.
Right.
Which, I guess that's his option that you can do. I take it as a pantheon of God. And you're right, in the beginning, when I read the very beginning, we assume that when we hear the word God, we're talking about one individual.
Yeah, right.
We're assuming that. So by the time we're getting to the earth, it's been how many millions of years before we got to the earth? And so this group of beings created earth and us. I like that idea myself. Now, does that move?
I mean, again, the group of beings created the earth and they created us.
Yes.
You mean heavenly beings?
What?
Angels? Extraterrestrials equal man. Huh?
Now we're going to get into language barriers, for sure. So if the universe already existed and there was chaos, which we know from science, it took a long, how many millions of years to get to where the earth was created and this solar system was created. So that's where this text comes in at. It comes in when all this stuff was, millions of years already happened. Only we know that, but the writer didn't know that. So he writes it, or she writes it, I don't know, whichever you want to say.
They got from their base of knowledge at that time.
Yes.
Which is very minimal.
Well.
It was, in certain ways, it was minimal. I mean, it was a lot more than what it was when they first came onto it, probably, but.
Well.
Yeah.
I'm not one who believes that the early Neanderthal and all that, that they were so ignorant as what we think. I'm not convinced that they were like we're so brilliant from our ancestors way back yonder.
No, I mean, there's a lot of brilliant people back then. I mean, they built the whatever
you
call it,
the
Tower of Babel. And all that crap. I mean, all that dust, I should say crap, excuse me.
What?
All the natural wonders of the world and everything. I mean, they're seeming to help it. If all we want, that artificial life came in, intelligent life came in from other parts of the universe to help.
Yes.
I wouldn't doubt that. All they had, the world is dying, and they had to come find something that was able to keep their life sustained.
Right.
I mean, now you got all these different things, all these different cultures that have similar ideas from across the world. Why does that happen? When you got people in South Africa, you got people in South America.
It's five major parts in which life started all at once. I think there's five different places in the earth where agriculture all of a sudden, all at the same time in five different places. Now, how does that happen? So it becomes very, I tend to agree with, there's more to, my point this morning is there's more to the picture, excuse me, than what at least I've been taught. And we shouldn't destroy the idea of gods away from our God. I think that's the picture I want to leave today. I want us to begin to understand, which we all do, that each of us think and grow in different ways. We understand things in different ways, but love brings us together. I think that's we have to, even this small group here, as we share our different ideas, we're not going to all agree, but we still love one another and appreciate one another. And I think that's very important. Next Sunday, I would like to talk about creation and evolution in the second story of the creation story.
So
forgiveness. the kindness of a Savior, the hope of nations. Savior, He can move the mountains. God is mighty to save. He is mighty to save forever. Author of salvation, He rose and conquered the grave. Jesus conquered the grave.
Yes, today, knowing that you are doing things in